several first-timers. Did you know that there's a talk tonight? Yeah?
Okay.
How did you hear about the talk? Flyer? You said?
Flyer.
Someone drag you? Yeah? Okay. And you? What is your name?
Me?
Yes.
My Chinese name is Xia,
actually. Xia?
Mm-hmm.
And you're here, you saw a flyer or you heard about it?
I saw it online, also it came on Sunday too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many of you have never heard the Heart Sutra before? Please raise your hand. Okay. All right. It's arguably one of the shortest Buddhist Mahayana texts. Not the shortest. The shortest one is just one syllable. It's just this is a little bit longer. But it's very condensed. Condensed teaching on all the major teachings within Buddhism is here. But one unique feature is that it denies or negates these teachings. Okay. So ordinarily, Buddhist texts expound a certain set of teachings as antidote to people's problems in life, and different kinds of illnesses, illnesses of the mind, attachments, greed, hatred, jealousy, and so on. The Heart Sutra is unique in that all the major teachings, tenets of Buddhism, espoused in other scriptures. And by the way, Buddhism does not only have one text, it's thousands. So it's not a kind of like one text, one Bible religion. Thousands of texts. So all the major tenets of these teachings lump them together and negates them, show the or reveal the true nature of these teachings. Okay. So let me read the text. You can read along with me or you can read it silently to yourselves. When the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara was coursing in the deep Prajna Paramita, he perceived that all five skandhas are empty, thereby transcending all sufferings. Shariputra, form is not other than emptiness, and emptiness not other than form. Form is precisely emptiness, and emptiness precisely form. So also are sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness. Sariputra, this voidness of all dharmas is not born, not destroyed, not impure, not pure, does not increase or decrease. In voidness there is no form, and no sensation, perception, volition, or consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. No sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, thought. There is no realm of the eye, all the way up to no realm of mental cognition. There is no ignorance, and there is no ending of ignorance, through to no aging and death, and no ending of aging and death. There is no suffering, no cause of suffering, no cessation of suffering, and no path. There is no wisdom or any attainment, with nothing to attain. Bodhisattvas relying on Prajna Paramita have no obstructions in their minds. Having no obstructions, there is no fear. And departing far from confusion and imagining, they reach ultimate nirvana. All past, present, and future Buddhas, relying on Prajnaparamita, attain Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Therefore, know that Prajnaparamita is the great mantra of power, the great mantra of wisdom, the supreme mantra, the unequaled mantra, which is able to remove all sufferings. It is real and not false. Therefore, recite the mantra of Prajnaparamita. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisattva. For those of you who are new, a quick synopsis. Bodhisattva refers to enlightened being. Specifically, a person who aspires to complete awakening and along the way to help other people accomplish the same goal. That's a bodhisattva. So if you want to be enlightened and you want to help other people, then you're a bodhisattva. Avalokiteshvara is one of the higher level bodhisattvas. Whereas we are baby bodhisattvas. Sometimes we can't even help ourselves. But we have the aspiration to fully develop our own potentials, and along our path, we help other people. Prajnaparamita means transcendent wisdom. Transcendent from this shore of suffering, vexations, emotional afflictions, to the other shore of nirvana, liberation. So this particular bodhisattva was coursing, contemplating in a profound transcendent wisdom, not an ordinary wisdom, but a profound, the most profound wisdom teaching in Buddhism. A set of teachings that transcends all sufferings. And in that process, he recognized that all skandhas, five skandhas refers to refresh our memory, form, sensation, perception, volition, and consciousness. This is what constitutes a human being. This is who we are. So in the Buddhist scheme of things, instead of identification of body and mind, the Buddhism have five. So body is form, the last four, sensation, perception, volition, consciousness, kind of finer division of mind. In terms of the process of how we experience things, that's how it's divided. Form, we have our physical body, there is the external environment, and how we experience things is always through sensation. There are only three types of sensation: pleasurable, unpleasurable, and neutral. On the basis of this sensation, we react to this very visceral, elemental contact with the external world. For example, you hear me hit the gong, right? Form. We hear it. Why do we hear it? Because we have auditory faculty, form. Right? Not only we have ear, faculty that works, we have eye, ear, nose, tongue, taste, body, tactile, sensation, and mind. Here, mind means just moment-to-moment consciousness, wakeful, form touches external environment, corresponding sense object. Eye contact with shape and color, form. Ear contact sound. When we hear that, so when we experience that, if I hit the gong very gently, and kind of the echo reverberates, we feel very pleasant, calming, pleasant sensation. On the basis of that, we are actually reacting to that. We're reacting to it in what way? Pleasant, we like. Unpleasant, we don't like. Right. On the basis of that, that is called the process of perception. So sensation, perception. Right. Sometimes people translate it as cognition. Yeah, you'll see various translations. Right. And this is a process of labeling. Why don't we like? Because we carry with ourselves a baggage of our own habit tendencies. We're habituated into seeing things, hearing things, touching things, and experiencing them essentially a certain way, colored by the content of the bag that we carry on our shoulder all the time. So filtered through our accumulated past experiences, we have a color lens. So we label this as good, that is bad. Because if there were some external criteria, then everyone would experience the same thing. But the fact that people don't experience the same thing. Some people hear gongs and, oh, what is he doing now? Hitting that. Or anticipating the next one. How come it's only one time? You know, or something, or get annoyed or something. Everyone experiences things differently. So that is perception, how we are coloring things. And that is where karma begins. Meaning volition. On the basis of our experience, filtered through our own perception, our own baggage, we define things, categorize things, divide things, make judgments about things, compartmentalize things in a certain way, and we give rise to action. There's only three kinds: body, speech, mind. Karma here means intentional action, not the kind of intentional action that we kind of, you know, I feel like slapping Matt, you know, I intend it. But if I accidentally step on his foot, that means I don't intend to. That must not be karma. No. Accidentally stepping on his foot is also intentional action. Why? What is intentional about it? Buddhist intention does not mean like we mean it or we don't mean it. It means the operation, the basic perception is operating, or lack of perception is operating. So long as that is operating, intention is present. For example, what is operating at the time of me accidentally stepping on Matthew's foot is ignorance, lack of mindfulness. Our mind is chattering here, so we don't see much out there. Right? Those of you who meditate, less chattering here, conversely, you see more things clearly. Because why? You're unmoving. When you're not moving, everything that moves becomes readily apparent. Right? Like a lifeguard. I always give this analogy. Those of you who come often, oh God, here comes the lifeguard analogy again. Lifeguard. The lifeguard is on the beach, mingling with everyone. You can see maybe 5 foot in front of him or her. But the lifeguard must sit in a chair, stationary. Then if anyone's drowning 20 feet away, 30 feet away, readily apparent. Why? Still here, movement is revealed. So when we have lack of mindfulness of what's going on, that means too much chattering here. So we don't see what's going on. But for meditators, focused, and aware. Less chattering here, see actually more clearly. Sometimes when the meditation, the power of concentration is extremely strong, even at night, will seem like daytime. Because the mind is bright, clear. Sound is perceived very, very far. Yeah? Why? Less chattering. Right? So the purpose of meditation, for those of you who are first timer, develop two things. Concentration and mindfulness. Very beginning level. This is our task. The mind strays off, bring it back. Strays off, bring it back. Again and again. So getting back to this analogy, accidentally stepping on someone's foot. Intended action. Why? Your mind is operating with something else, preoccupied with some other things happening here, right? That's why you lack mindfulness to step on someone's foot. So karma is created. So that definition of karma is intentional action. Doesn't mean you mean it or not, but just means the presence of the mind of vexations, actually. the mind that's colored by negativity. Unfortunately, that's constantly present. That's why we need to liberate ourselves, free ourselves. And we'll get to that later. So, having an action of body and speech and mind, volition, the fourth skanda, perpetuates our lives. Perpetuates our habit tendencies. You tend to see things a certain way, and you tend to experience things a certain way. And you tend to plant the same kind of seed, karmic seed, a certain way. How do you plant them? Through body, speech, and mind. Therefore, this mechanism of cause and effect, cause and effect, cause becoming the effect, effect turned to cause, again, perpetuating itself, into a stream of what? Consciousness. The fifth skanda. Right? Form, sensation, perception. Oh, it's a beautiful sound. Right? Volition. Oh, I want it to last longer. Or maybe he should hit it another time or something. Generating mental action. Grasping. Like, I grasp. Don't like, I don't. Or sound, but my neighbor is making some other noise. I'm trying to hear the sound of this and he's disturbing me. Karma. Like, grasp. Don't like, get rid of it. So karma is generated, and that perpetuates consciousness, which here just means moment to moment to moment to moment awareness, cognition. And this leaves a lasting imprint, repercussion. So it's like it's like the flame. Like lighting an incense. Each moment the incense is lit, it's actually a different moment. It's not the same heat or flame. Each moment is different. But because certain conditions are present, it makes the flame continue, like a candlelight. Like oxygen, that's one condition. So, it's not the same flame. But because certain condition format the situation in a certain way, therefore the flame will continue. And the previous moment of flame serve as a condition for the next moment. The next moment. The next moment. But within that continuity, Buddhism, or Chan, or Zen, or all school of Buddhism, essentially, does not believe that there's a essence to the flame, like flameness to the flame. It's just conditions meeting, conditions meeting, conditions meeting. Conditions change, the result change. That's a good news. Why? Because how we perpetuate our lives through the five skandhas, body and mind, continually influencing one another, creating more conditions to perpetuate self. This is what binds us, and this is what frees us. And Heart Sutra is going to tell us how we are freed. It binds us because of this continual chain, unbroken. Moment to moment, even listening to me now, the five skandhas perpetuating. Can't escape it. But if you see, like Avalokiteshvara, coursing the deep transcendent wisdom, penetrating insight, and you discover that the five skandhas are empty, what happens? You transcend all suffering. What binds this five skandhas, perpetuates ourselves, is very distinct mechanism of production, the five skandhas. What does it produce? It produces a sense of self, like me, I, from each moment to the next. I see something, I like something, I don't like something, as opposed to seeing things in an interconnected way. The so-called I, my opinion, my experience, is not yours at all. My experience comes from everyone else. Right? Guo Gu is made up of non-Guo Gu. What I think is mine, what I think is my opinion, I probably read it somewhere, learned it somewhere, personally experienced it somewhere. So it's always connected with everything else around me. So it's kind of liberating in that sense. So it's like a piece of paper made up of different conditions. Trees, sunshine, soil, nutrition from the rain, the factory maker, make a piece of paper, the bleach, dye, all these conditions. One condition changes, the outcome changes. Maybe too much water, and the paper will come out more elastic. Not enough water, paper becomes brittle. One condition changes, everything changes. Same thing. The five skandhas, what we are made up of. Form. The body is definitely mine. Me? Of course not. You, 2 years old, is about this big. Which part of you is now? Constantly changing. Your bones about this big. Right? Internal, external, scientists tell us that in 7 years, inside out completely changes, including all the cells and everything. So the body is definitely not yours. View. My opinion, that must be mine. That's not yours either. Right? Your views constantly changes. Your views are made up of other people's views. Right? So we relate it. So when these different conditions come together for the paper, then we have paper. Different conditions come together for us, we have our sense of self. So seeing the wisdom, the emptiness of this paperlessness for ourselves, the selflessness is actually extremely liberating. For all of our lives, we have been carrying around our baggage of the five skandhas, viscerally, emotionally invested in what we think is mine, us, me. Suddenly, that burden, you just let go of this bag from your shoulder. Very liberating. You realize the interconnectedness of everything. That is the Chan Awakening. So, the wisdom of emptiness means the compassion of interrelatedness. So emptiness means relationship. That's why in Buddhism, wisdom and compassion is together. You don't have wisdom first and then, oh, I have wisdom now. Maybe I should cultivate compassion. Meditate on loving kindness, generate good feeling to other people. No. When wisdom arises, compassion naturally arises. How is compassion defined? I don't mean you being a good guy. Let everyone step all over you. You want my money? Sure, here. You know, you're gonna rob my house? Of course, take it. You know, no, you call the police. Okay. Wisdom means you see interconnectedness. You see emptiness, not vacuity, not some kind of space that in meditation, only in meditation, you zap into. Right? No, it means in the midst of daily life, in the midst of form, in the midst of interaction, we recognize, not intellectually, experientially, relationships. Radical interconnectedness. Guogu exists because of non-guogu. So naturally, your actions no longer based on the five skandhas production of the sense of self, self-referentiality. In all of your decision making, all of your judgments, all of your experience, perceptions, like, is this good for me or is it not good for me? I like or I don't like. No longer based on that. So the illusion or delusion of the sense of kind of separate self falls away. And you see things in terms of how things naturally correspond, relate, mutually interact with one another. In other words, you see things in terms of causes and conditions. So you don't put yourself in the center of every damn thing that you experience. You take it out. Take it out. So you see things, this thing needs to respond this way. You respond, like a mirror. There's no kind of permanent image to the mirror. Imagine there's a permanent image to the mirror. That's the sense of self. This false sense of me, I, mine. Thinking yourself is some kind of separate existence, independent. The permanent image. There's no image. If it's a permanent image, can you see things clearly? It's kind of always juxtaposed, kind of superimposed with this image of you. And then reflecting on everything else. No image. You see things freely, openly, receptively. Things as they are, you respond. This person needs scolding, you scold. That's compassion. Right? My teacher, very fond of slapping me, embarrassing me, humiliating me when he was alive, in public, revealing to me myself. Sense of self-grasping, right? Blame me for something I didn't do. He's very skillful at it. Usually when people blame you, what do you do? I didn't do. That's not me, it's he. Me. You need to defend yourself, cherish yourself. I'm not the one to blame. It's all up right in front of your face. Yourself. And you fall into his trap. Okay. One time, this project, public relations, we need to take photos of him. He told me to get a camera. I get a camera, set up his Dharma talk. His Dharma talks like this, hundreds of people, right? Dharma talk, just beginning. He's very humorous. Zen master is always very humorous. He says, look at that idiot back there, my attendant monk. setting up the camera like he's some kind of professional. So he broke the ice. Everyone's cracking up. It's like, oh, so humorous. He cracked the ice, all right. The ice in me just cracked. It's like, I went upstairs. I set up the camera. And I just went to my room. You know what I did? This is when I was a novice monk. I started smacking my pillow. Why is he always embarrassing me like this? Why? I understand. I read about Mitarepa, this Tibetan saint. His teacher Marpa is kind of torturing him. Tell him to build a door here, and then, oh, I didn't tell you to do that. Build it over there. Take it off. Do it over here. Do that. Ah, too much over there. Move it over here. It's creating problems when there's no problems. Zen masters are very good at that. Create problems when there's no problems. Right? Satisfying monastery. Good life, you know, you meditate, you read scriptures, you know, you wait for donations to come, and, you know, it creates problems within no problems, right? So my Dharma brother's like, he's just training you. He's like, no, he's not. He's not training. He's always doing this, this old man, right? And then I stopped talking to him for 3 days, being his attendant monk, right? Breakfast, serving, it's like, you know, just self-absorbed. I didn't see it. That's the whole Buddhist project, is to see moment to moment the cause of your suffering, your own self-grasping. I like, I don't like. What is suffering in Buddhism? Suffering is basically very simple in Buddhism. It means you want this moment to be other than what it is. Right? You see yourself. You want this moment to be other than what it is. Right? That's suffering, the cause right there. It's the beginning of your own kind of coloration of the world around you. You have your own perception. Your teacher, he's not training me, he's doing this. Right? Until I start learning. Right? It's not about posture. Method. Yeah. I know Buddhist text. I've taken a class with Dr. Yu at FSU. And I got an A for the class. Not that. I've been studying for 10, 20 years. I've been sitting. No. Nothing to do with that. Practice has nothing to do with awakening. If practice has something to do with awakening, then it can be produced. If it's produced, then it can be taken away. So why are we here then? Aren't we here to practice? Practice does not produce awakening. But practice, true practice, not bind to form, posture, what you do. True practice is just realize your vexations, basically. How you moment to moment generate all kinds of garbage, colorations. Practice start to take off the glasses, color lenses, see things as they are. So, Avalokiteshvara here, so realizing the five skandhas are empty, transcending all suffering, understanding the mechanism of how the self is perpetuated, generated. Self-grasping. Right. Here I must have a footnote. Buddhism does not deny kind of conventional kind of self. You need conventional. You need a sense of self. Right? In fact, you need quite a strong sense of self. A firm sense of self. You don't jump from self to no self. You have to affirm the self. How do you affirm the self? You understand your weaknesses, your shortcomings, your vexations openly. You don't try to hide your shortcomings. And you know your strengths. That's how to establish self-confidence. Not boosting yourself on the basis of some fantasy. Right? You know exactly your weakness. You know what your problem is. You understand how you generate vexations all the time, projecting on everyone around you, then you'll be more forgiving for everyone around you who do that the same thing. You'll be more compassionate. Right? Know yourself, know others, then you know how to advance and retreat. This is not even Buddhism. This is the art of war, Sun Tzu. Right? Read the book. Right? Know yourself, know your enemy. Then each battle you'll win. Know how to advance and retreat. Same practice. Zen master once said, understand the self, to understand the way, the practice, is to understand the self. Dogen said that. Understand the way is to understand the self. He didn't say understand the way is to understand more scriptures. No. Scriptures, methods, they point to the self. They all point to, like my teacher did, spontaneously training me. He point right to exactly what the problem is. Study the way is to study the self. How do you study the self? Forget about the self. Dogen lay out the path in 12th century very clearly. Right? Actually, Shakyamuni Buddha, 2,500 years ago, did that very clearly. Right? Study the way is to study the self. Study the self is to forget about itself. To forget about itself is to be awakened by everyone else. Everyone becomes your teacher. Why? They reveal to you your own self-grasping. They're your mirrors. Right? But put it concretely, we have to first affirm the self. Know our weakness. Know our kind of mechanism, habit tendencies. Greed, hatred, ignorance, jealousy, all that. Color lenses. Mature the self. Second stage. Truly develop spiritually. Applying antidote, applying the method. Once you have affirmed the self, then you have matured the self. Then you let go of the self. So people have neurotic problems, neurosis, kind of self-disparaging ideas, kind of low self-esteem. You don't study no self. You study self first. You build up understanding truly your own mechanism, right? Your own fears, your compulsive, what is that? OCD. Right. There's a research done. Recently, I read in a magazine. Right, one of my students gave me on brain and the practice of mindfulness. Right. Realizing, oh, it's my OCD acting again. Not identifying with it, but watching it. Slowly, that person start to be free from it. Yeah. Close the door. I had to close it 3 times, right, and wipe it away, the candle and all that. So slowly you can understand through mindfulness, all sorts of practices. Then we let go of the self. And letting go of the self depends on 3 things. It's very important. We must listen to the teachings clearly, without coloring it with our own preferences or understandings, interpretations. We must listen to it clearly, exactly what this person is saying, what this book is trying to say, very clearly. First stage. Second, we have to reflect upon it, integrating it into our own way of seeing things. Then we must meditate on it, which is not sitting meditation, not walking meditation, but applying it in daily life. When vexations come, when jealousy, hatred, or aversion, annoying, frustration, challenges in life. Challenges in life. Like, for example, at work, someone blame you, something you didn't do. You apply the causes and conditions coming together. I have a choice now. Do I want to perpetuate my old tendency of kind of defense mechanism, or do I want to see as perhaps this person is misunderstanding me? Nothing to do with you. Don't put yourself in the middle of all your experiences. See? You learn to see things like, oh, it's this person. So does it have anything to do with you? No. It's that person's thoughts, perceptions, mechanism. Right? You can even feel sympathy. It's just deluded. Not like that. But you can just understand this person. Maybe walk on the wrong side of the bed, give them a benefit of the doubt. You don't take things. The reason we take things personally is because we understand the teaching of emptiness in terms of the paper, in terms of self, like I explained it, but emotionally, we cannot act otherwise. That is meditation. Applying it. After you have convinced yourself, this is how things actually are. Things are interrelated, connected. Right? You try to apply it. Right? The only way to apply is you gain some mastery of ordinary practice in meditation, formal meditation, like relaxed, natural, and clear. The three things that I drill into you folks every time you come. Right? So, when you have a wandering thoughts, you relax. Natural. Clear. So when your habit arises, what happens? You relax. And then you have a chance to see your mechanism. Otherwise, it's so fast the way you process form, sensation, perception, volition, consciousness. Karma just churns. Moment to moment, so fast you don't even see it. Right? That's dangerous. That's a dangerous place to be. Right? So you can actually relax into each moment. So to see things as they arise, and then you bring it back. That's spaciousness in your meditation. Relax. Be natural. And you can see what's happening. Then you begin to have a choice. So meditation, you develop a simple space in which you have a choice. Right? Usually we don't have a choice. Something good happens, become so happy. Something bad, become so sad. No space between your thought and your action. But that simple training of wandering thoughts, bring it back. Wandering thoughts, bring it back. Wandering thoughts, bring it back. Next time you have thoughts, vexations, you realize it as a wandering thought. As a thought, then you have a choice to bring it back. Then you have a choice. Do I follow the same pattern? Do I react? Or maybe this person is just, he just have his own ideas. And then you can explain. Change the karma between you and this person. Once you can begin to do that, then you are meditating in daily life. Right? So listening, reflecting about things that you've heard, things that you've read about the Dharma, the teachings, and applying it. Buddhism values our intelligence. It's a religion that extremely values intelligence, our own discernment of things. No one is trying to shove a set of teachings down your throat. You listen to it, you reflect it. if it makes sense or not. You apply it, try it out. Does meditation work? Does this teaching actually work? Can one become enlightened? See their true nature? You try it. You come to a retreat. We'll soon have a retreat. During the board meeting, I raised the possibility of retreats. So we'll in the spring, sometime in the early spring, maybe January or February, we can have a short half a day, maybe, or one day. You begin like that. You apply the method. I'll send out announcements about it. So only by this means will you begin to break the mechanism of self-referentiality. You affirm it. Don't hide it. Honest to yourself. Your true face. Right? Don't conceal things. Right? You begin to affirm yourself. Confidence is established on something very concrete. Right? Not fantasy. Then you mature yourself. And then you can let go of yourself. You see through the veil of this mechanism, vicious cycle. That's basically the Buddhist path. Now, the text continues. Avalokiteshvara is actually teaching Shariputra after he realized emptiness. Form is not other than emptiness. Very simple. We explained this last time. Form, non other than emptiness in the way that I just explained it. Means this relationship right, with everything else. Right. And emptiness. Because everything is related, form is possible. Future is possible. You see? Emptiness, not other than form. If Buddhism just stopped at form is emptiness, then it would be kind of like a lopsided, pessimistic view on life. But emptiness is precisely form. This way, emptiness is right in the midst of activity, relationships, interactions. Why? Because emptiness is relationship. Openness, relatedness. My view comes from everything else. My body comes from what I eat, which comes from everything else. All related. We're breathing the same air. We're creating the same kind of earth through our own actions. We're creating the same kind of country. We are creating it. So we're related. And the way to change it? Very simple. Change the conditions, then the outcome will change. Okay. So not only form is like this, sensation, the content of the five skandhas, perception, volition, consciousness, all are like this. Meaning, sensation is precisely emptiness, and emptiness precisely sensations. Why would sensation be emptiness? If you examine our experience, it's always characterized by a dualism, subject and object, sense faculty and sense object. Every experience is characterized by this two. You can't have an experience of form without sense faculty of eyes, seeing objects. Therefore, you recognize it, you color it through perception, you label it, right? So it's like a tripod. Faculty, external objects, give rise to consciousness or awareness. If you take away one leg in the tripod, the whole thing falls apart. That's why sensation, tactile sensation, some pleasant sensation, because we have body. environment, interaction. This is good news because we recognize through that there's openness. For example, when you meditate, you have a lot of wandering thoughts, thinking of this, thinking of that, past and future. But in the midst of these wandering thoughts, that is precisely where you liberate yourself. The faculty of mind, maybe brain, and this aspect of knowing, right? The faculty of mind, having a wandering thought, right? Produces a certain kind of momentum, reverberation, right? Tripod, right? Faculty, object, produces the fruit. But have you ever thought about when you have wandering thoughts, when you're just sitting there, thoughts liberate themselves. Moment to moment to moment. You don't have to do anything. They come and they go. They come and they go. They come and they go. So moment to moment, you liberate yourselves. You're actually liberated already. The nature of your mind is free. So liberation is not something produced like an altered states of consciousness. Like whack yourself over the head and you have kind of blissful feelings or numbness. No. It's just moment to moment free. Right? So instead of being completely emotionally vested in the reality that's created by your own sense faculty form out there, and the product you think is so real, it's my, me, I, you're unplugged, like Matrix, you know, unplug. You unplug yourself. You can plug it back anytime you want. You can do that. But when you plug back like Neo, you don't think, oh, this bullet is really real. No. That's why Matrix, Neo, the bullet comes, he doesn't have to. Remember the moment when, what's his name? Morpheus. Says that, I'm going to train you, blah, 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 blah. Says, are you saying that I'm going to have to, I'll be so fast that I'll be able to dodge bullets? What did Morpheus say?
You won't have to.
You won't have to.
Yeah.
Why? Because like in your dream, you're dreaming of all this tiger, vicious things, poisonous things, oh, scary things. And you wake up, oh, it's a dream. But when you're so vested in this dream, yeah, you can actually produce effects such as sweating physically. You can actually produce illness physically. But it's just the mind. The person is just lying there having a dream. That's the power of the mind. So we are vested in this world that we have constructed. Everything is real. The brand of clothes that we wear, the car that we drive, the food that we buy. We have to shop at New Leaf Market. Organic. Better. Or, you know, the clothes or anything can be an object of your constructed attachment. And you're vested in it. I'm a Democrat, you're Republican, I'm this, I'm green, and you're not. And whatever the world that you construct, that's the, you plug in. And you're so vested in this world that you have to go on demonstrations and strike and all that. And then meanwhile, one day when you unplug yourself, you say, oh. Now, other people may be still deluded. So you plug yourself back in and you go on strikes. And you go to New Leaf Market, you want to save the earth. But in the midst of that, you're not bound by it. You're in the world, you're not of the world. You're free because you know this is what is necessary. You respond like a mirror. You see? Everything can become a source of attachment. So you must see through the veil. Now, That's why sensation, perception, all of our volition, we're just constructing matrix. What we like, what we don't like, this and that, blah, 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 blah. Right? So for a person who's awakened, he sees the world as a pure land, as a Buddha land, perfect. People can be arguing, battling with themselves, bombing each other, destroying, taking other countries' oil, and kind of kidnapping children, kind of killing each other. Actually, from the perception of a person who is awakened, there's no problem. Why? You have no problem. But is there a problem, sentient beings? Oh, sentient beings have a lot of problems. So we respond to what sentient beings need, what people need. Should you stop war? Oh yeah. People rob your house? Call the police. But you don't beat up the person first and then call the police. Right? Because he robbed me. How can you rob me? You come to my house? I got a, what's that? 45 under my bed. You know? Just call the police. The person will. And if you can really spare the thing, just take it. If it make you happy, take it. Don't do it next time. If you feel that person is going to continue to do this, call the police. Prevent him from harming other people. But you don't put yourself in there. It's just what the situation calls for. That's no self in action. That's compassion. Huh? I used to be a monitor for 10, 15 years. The person that holds the Zen stick that whack people. I don't whack, it's like, aha, I'm finally promoted to be a timekeeper. Whack! The person's speaking. Whack! No, I'm helping. That's why we hold a stick, tap him on the shoulder. He recognizes because he's been going like this. Chicken pecking at the rice. So you wake up the chicken. Stop eating the rice. And the person recognizes, bow. And the timekeeper bows. Recognizing the Buddha nature, intrinsic freedom from this matrix within, yet you tend to be vested in this matrix. So let me just tap you on the shoulder a couple times. Right? Recognizing the freedom, and he or she in return is recognizing. Bow. Not because I want to hit you, the situation calls for it. Moment to moment, you don't put yourself in there, which is the mind's disease. We always put ourselves in the center of everything. Everything. Practice, meditation. Not listening part, not reflecting part. Meditation means take it out. Right? Apply the Dharma. Free ourselves. Unplug. Once you understand this, you understand the Heart Sutra, no problem. And I can just whiz right through it. Consciousness, voidness of all dharmas, not born, not destroyed, not impure, pure, impure, destroyed, death, birth, no, everything just cycles. Kind of like physics, they say that. Energy just kind of cycles. What binds our energy together, this energy, is our own karmic pattern, habit tendency. So we tend to do things a certain way, format our actions a certain way, plant the same karmic seeds. Of course, we're going to behave a certain way. So it's like formatting your own disk or a USB drive. Whatever things you throw in the USB drive, that's yours. No one else put it in there. You put it in there. So you format your own disk. You format your own files. So it perpetuates that way, of course. Right? It's like Santa Claus bag. Right? You're putting all these presents, and when you close your eyes, you kind of reach down, kind of grab out Santa Claus bag. That's like the analogy of how you tend to behave in relation to the external world. Right? grabbed the Santa Claus bag. You tend to be a hateful person. It's most of the Santa Claus bag presents just hateful presents. You grab it out, most likely you're going to grab a not so good present. Right? If you always plant good things, you're going to grab out, it's going to be a good present. You see? You plant things. So, what is it talking about? No birth, no increase, no decrease, not born, not destroyed. Because we're continuously planting seeds. Right? And what holds us together, so we're not kind of schizophrenics, right? Have multiple personality because we have no self. Right? Not that. What binds us have a particular personality, particular character, particular way of seeing things. It's the content of our bag, karmic bag. So you tend to kind of produce the same thing that you plant. So that cycle continues. It just transforms. No destruction. What happens when you're enlightened? Is there destruction? Still no destruction. Now, you make use of all the contents of your karmic Santa Claus bag for the benefit of all sentient beings, all living beings. All your resources, your knowledge, your intellect, your critical thinking skill, your kindness, even your vexations, negative karma, your tendency to be angry, that energy transformed, benefit other beings continuously. That's why I like Zen masters, they have different personalities. Some are kind of kind, always give like one word answers. Some, no matter what the hell you say, they whack you. You know? Someone comes, like, question the master, what is the meaning of Buddha Dharma? Whack. Master, I finally discovered what the meaning of Buddha Dharma is. Whack. Yeah. Someone just, they have, that means they're not perfected yet in terms of Buddhahood. They realize their full Buddha nature within, but they're still bound by karma, personality types, habit tendencies. Even after thorough enlightenment, thorough, they still have a particular way about them. In fact, all bodhisattvas are characterized. Avalokiteshvara, embodiment of compassion. Manjusri, embodiment of wisdom. Some have particular qualities. Some have other qualities. When they are perfected, they become full Buddhas. Right? That's like this. All the garbage, vexations, like wine. Thoroughly enlightened person. Dump the whole wine out. But you smell the bottle. Still smells like wine. Why? The residual habit tendencies are still there. So enlightenment, once, not enough. You gotta do it again, and again, and again, and again. In awakening. Then, that's like, pour a little bit out, until the whole bottle of wine is just chucked out. Then you become full Buddha. So, for our purposes, first step is what? Listening clearly, actually understanding it, reflecting about it, applying it. Then we'll realize in voidness, there's no form, no sensation. In other words, fixed sensation. Our own perception, preferenced volition, consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Doesn't mean the person become an idiot or a zombie. No eye, ear, nose, tongue. No. No, your eye. Think of this is mine. My ear. Right? Just becomes free. All of your resources, all of these things become your resources. Actually, the breakdown of all the sense, six sense faculties, six sense objects, six sense consciousness, cognitive moments that correspond to the faculty corresponding with action, refers in Buddhism to the 18 realms, teachings of the 18 realms that constitutes our cosmology. Okay? So all the teachings are broken down part by part, taken apart. Okay? Our last and final installment of the Heart Sutra, next time, we'll get into these technical things. But do you feel like you have understood the Heart Sutra? The basic gist of it? Any questions? I spoke a lot tonight. How many of you find it quite strange the first time hearing the Heart Sutra and the first time hearing all this stuff? Is that reasonable? Okay.
There's another Heart Sutra that the other meditation class does on Tuesday. It's a little different variation.
Mm-hmm. Different translation.
Yeah.
I also found online there's an explanation. On the TBC website, right? That explanation basically just goes through the technical things. You know, what is the six sense faculty, six realm, 18 realms, five skandhas, what are they? So you can familiarize yourself with them. The most important thing is not conceptual understanding, emotional. Why is it that we know very well that things are impermanent, everything is related, but we still act the same way when we encounter challenges, especially when the self is threatened? That's when your self-grasping come out. When everything is going well, smooth, you're so kind and gentle. When things are not going well, someone blame you or cheat you or something, then you see yourself right in front. That's why my master is like constantly kind of poking me, jabbing me, self-grasping. Right.
Actually, I do have a question.
Sure.
After you've attained nirvana and you're able to reach into your Santa Claus bag and pull out anything, you know, and to help other people, the negative emotions, do they somehow change, or are they still negative and you can, as you said, pull them out and use them?
Negative are only, in Buddhism, only designated
products
by
of the mind, products of the self.
Products
so
of the mind.
Once you attain nirvana, they're no longer viewed as negative, and thus
no longer,
they
no
change.
Longer.
Okay.
They completely change. What is negative and what is positive depends on where they lead to, really. Lead to liberation or it leads to more suffering. Anger, you see the early text, the Buddha sometimes scold his disciples. You idiot, how can you beg for the food not knowing what you're eating? Right? Sometimes his disciples do something wrong, right? Buddhist monastics at that time begged for their food. Right. That's a long story, but different occasions, right. Different reactions is required. Other people may think, oh, that's anger. How can you have anger? No. From this person's perspective, no anger. Just response. All right? Okay. Thank you all for coming. So wonderful seeing a lot of people here. All right, let's help collect the text. I'm going to pass around this folder and then put away your cushions. Please stack the cushions neatly.